Here we are, January 7th. I almost said 6th because, you know, people love to talk about Jay. Hey, you weren't even going to go there. This is Common Sense Ohio. We're coming at you. Brand new year, brand new show. We've got Troy over at the command center. You can't see him, but I promise someday soon you will.
Troy
Henriksen. He works for me up in my law firm. See, we got to let people warm up to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Troy works upstairs at the law firm with me, Palmer Legal Defense, if you need any legal help. Anyway, Troy's going to take over the role of producer, participant, fact checker. So
it's an umbrella term. I like it.
It's an umbrella. Yeah. We'll call it the production specialist. Anyway, Common Sense Ohio for 2000. What year are we at? 2026.
It's unreal.
Unreal. Anyway, right back at it. Before we even start, before there's any criticism, before I'm forced to eat my humble pie, the Ohio State Buckeyes, contrary to my prediction, lost. But understand, even if I thought they were going to lose, I wouldn't have said that. So anyway, that is what it is. I don't want to hear any more about it. We are brought to you, by the way, by Harper Plus Accounting. I talked to Glenn Harper even in the last couple of days because I'm wrapping up my accounting for my business, for my various businesses, and for my personal. And guess what? I am completely on top of the game. Our books and records are clean. I don't owe any money. Because what? I did some planning throughout the year. Wow. And it starts now. If you didn't use Harper last year, no big deal. You can use him this year.
Yeah.
So Harper Plus Accounting, check him up at
and
Harper.
So much has changed. What's coming this year in terms of tax?
There's a lot code changes. Going on.
It's incredible. You know, the no taxes on tips for certain people and
not us.
And how that has to be handled. So, you know, your employer has to do certain things so that you don't have to pay taxes on it. And all of this detail is still being rolled out by Treasury Department. Yeah. So you really do need a hell of an accountant.
Yeah, you do. And look, if it's just a simple tax return because you got a W-2 income, he can help you there too, a whole different thing. But if you got more complicated stuff, a business, a restaurant, something with employees, Harper Plus Accounting. This day in history.
Another atrocity, not the Miami OSU game, but
so January 7, 1979, Vietnamese troop seized the Cambodian capital of Phnom Penh, toppling the brutal regime of Pol Pot and his Khmer Rouge. So, you know,
commies fighting commies.
Commies fighting, like, even Pol Pot was too much for other commies.
Yeah.
Communists.
Yeah.
And look, he only killed 2 million.
That's all.
Which, you know, in compared to the last century where there was 100 million killed.
And like Stalin, he took out the elite. Mm-hmm. He took out anybody who wore glasses, for example, was considered to be an intellectual, you know, to him.
Yeah.
You know, because that meant you knew how to read. Yeah. And, you know, God forbid you have any book readers.
Heaven forbid you educate yourself and talk to others and communicate and have discourse like we have here at Common Sense Ohio.
So, I mean, he took out the educated strata of Cambodian society, and it's just unbelievable that they could ever rebuild.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is really dense history, so we're not going to go into all of it, but I will say this. There's a great movie called The Killing Fields, and it's all about the Khmer Rouge, which was Pol Pot's organization.
Yeah.
And he killed, like we said, 2 million people.
Yeah.
Eventually, even the communists had enough, and enough was enough, and they sort of invaded. And I think in 79, he was out of there. And by 97, the Khmer Rouge still existed out in the jungles in these weird places. But in 97, even his own people put him on trial.
Yeah.
And he was sentenced to prison, but died in 98 house arrest.
The flow of refugees out of Cambodia was affecting Vietnam. Was affecting all of his neighbors. And, you know, so they had an interest.
People fled the communist socialist regimes?
Yes. Like they're fleeing New York City.
Ah, there's the link. There's the link. So we have Mandani has been
or
coronated.
As I call it, Mom Daddy.
Mom Daddy.
Because he wants to be your mom and
Mom
Daddy.
Mom Commie. He's been coronated the leader, the mayor of New York City. And this is why. So here's how it goes. I come in the mornings and I do some research on this day in history. Sometimes I know a day, sometimes I don't. And I always look for something that links it up. And it is remarkable as a history major myself. And by the way, you can be a history major at home. All you gotta do is read history. You don't need to go to college for it.
Yeah. So,
but as a history major myself, I love this because you can, we can go back in history, in this case, not that far back in our lifetimes. We had the results. The world experienced the results of this type of socialist communist takeover.
Absolutely.
And I'm not suggesting for a second that Mandani's going to kill 2 million people, but it starts somewhere. And it always starts with these seeds of these ideas that he has, like everything should be free and everything is the capitalist system is unfair. And yeah. Karl Marx was right. Essentially is what they're saying.
Right.
And there was this woman, I forget what her role is. I think she's in like the property. I forget what it was, but have you seen this?
Oh yeah.
We should, soon we'll be able to pull this up. We should pull this up because she is saying we have all become way too comfortable with our individual property rights. In other words, Norm, your house, how dare you own a house? Right. How dare you own property?
This is my worst thing for the week. You just hit it.
Yeah, we'll get back to it.
His appointee for the rent control job.
I forget her name.
But yeah, she's we'll get a whack job.
And she is saying, don't get so, you know, it's just that we have become conditioned to appreciate our individual property possessions. And, you know, their language is even sort of
collectivist.
It's collectivist, but even the language she chooses makes it sort of softens what she's really saying.
Right.
What she's really saying is the government's going to take your property and don't worry, you're just used to having your own property. It's not that big a deal. When you get conditioned to understand that your property is a collective possession, then all will be okay.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Yep. Well, the another couple of things he did. I mean, you talk about, you know, the media likes to frame Donald Trump's actions as retribution or revenge or whatever. But the first two things Mamdani did, right, is all of the policies against anti-Semitism that were put into place by the previous mayor, he removed all of the pro-Israel stuff. And he also, he removed it, or he advanced the investigation into the previous mayor all over again, you know, after Trump pardoned the mayor.
But understand Trump's, this is a good legal segue.
Yeah,
Trump can only pardon the mayor. He can only be a federal. So there's still.
So Mamdani's telling the New York prosecutor, you know, let's go after.
Let's go after my rivals.
Eric Adams.
Adams. Yeah.
So anyway. You know, which sounds very vengeful because Adams obviously was going to run, for re-election and dropped out. But he did not endorse. He was one of the Democrats that did not endorse Mamdani.
This is remarkable.
It's political payback. It's stuff Stalin would have done.
And Mamdani's, like the hollowness of what he's promising. You know, he was asked, I think, on one of these shows, you know, how are you going to pay for the free buses? Well, What the real question is we are going to have free buses. That's the real question.
Right.
It's not how we're going to do it. Yeah. It's not anything, but we're going to have it. And this is, I've had conversations with the younger generation, perhaps Troy's generation, although Troy's not one of them, but I've had conversations with the younger folks.
Right.
They didn't have to live through, our understanding by our, I mean, our, you're a little bit older, but you know, we grew up, in the Cold War.
Right.
And we were around for all of this.
Sure.
And people don't understand where this ideology goes
and
what it's all about
and
why it's so bad. Because on paper, it always looks good.
Well, young people who haven't gotten their first paycheck yet and seen that big chunk, you know, like a third that goes to the government and they're like, oh, I thought I was making $500 this week, but actually I'm going to get about $325.
Yeah.
You know, and when that first hits a young person, that's usually when they transition from, you know, hey, it's somebody else's money, so it's free, to now, oh, I get it. It's my money.
It's my money. Yeah. But yeah. I fear that even that is gone. I mean, there was this notion, I always thought, you know, look, you can go to these little think tanks, these little communist think tanks, we call them universities, colleges.
Right. Indoctrination centers.
And, you know, you can have all these beliefs, but guess what? The real world's going to hit you and right hard as soon as you exit. But that hasn't happened.
Well,
in the last generation of
kids. You know, Marx and Lenin and all these theorists dismissed human nature. You know, they thought that the better angels in all of us would overcome our natural and our very human need for self-interest. You know, like you know, if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of other people. So you need to eat, you need to breathe, you need water, well, you need clothes, you need shelter.
But
you amalgamate those things out of your self-interest.
But it's not only that. It's that when you take care of those things, when we as humans, and I think this is psychologically fact. I'm just going to call it a fact. I'm not a psychologist. Look, all I am is an observer of stuff I see.
Yeah.
And stuff I experience.
Right.
And what I have experienced in my life is that when I take control of all those things you're talking about, I find satisfaction.
Right.
I find human set, and it doesn't matter how much of it I have.
Right.
So if you've got a messy basement, I happen to have one right now. You've seen it. Right. Moved into a new house. I got boxes everywhere.
Of course.
When I go down there and toil in my own labor and organize it, I feel good.
Yes.
I feel good. And it's not that I'm happy, but I get satisfaction out of that. Right. And when I feel satisfied with my life, then I'm not, it helps me then spread that to others. That's when everything happens. Now, or you can just take the Mandani approach and say, we're going to take it all from you, and then we're going to force satisfaction on you by giving you free stuff. But it's a path to the dark side of the force. I mean,
absolutely.
It really is. The free stuff is, it merely leads you straight to hell.
Because it's not free.
It's unsatisfying. But it's not just that it's not free. Somebody's paying. But it's unsatisfying. Right. When you sit at home and somebody just spoon feeds you your meager earnings or your meager portions of whatever you get in the collective world, not only is it not enough ever, but you're not satisfied. Like there's no self-gratification out of that.
Right.
And if you think that Madani is going to gratify you and make you satisfied with your place in the world by giving you free crap, like a free bus ride, then you, like you said, you haven't experienced not even your first paycheck.
Well, his economy.
Or you've got too much money and you don't understand what it's really like.
His economy will, just like Venezuela's economy cratered under Chavez and Maduro, that's what's going to happen in New York City. It's inevitable.
It's inevitable.
It's going to crater. And the people are either going to replace Mamdani the next election, or he is not going to be able to fulfill. Well, he's going to have to back out of his promises because
the
billionaires and millionaires, they can pick up and leave. They like all the big banks, all the big trading houses, they all have these huge operations in Florida now.
Yeah.
They
Texas
don't,
and Florida and Tennessee.
They do not have to be in New York City.
Well, here's what's interesting. Troy and I were talking yesterday about this.
You can't make them stay.
Well, that was the question. That was what we were kicking around. Can California make Chevron stay, make Philips or Google stay, make Starbucks stay?
Right.
And they can't.
And do with this long arm taxation, like, oh, you used to be here, so we're going to keep taxing you as if you're still here. No, that's not going to work.
It's not going to work. And they can sue, they can do whatever they want, but as long as we still have a federal government intact, it's not going to work.
It's not going to happen.
But so that's sort of our bulwark. That's maybe our last bulwark is that we created, we the people created the United States of America, which in its creation was designed to have independent states operating with a federal sovereignty, but also with a federalistic idea that we have our own individual states that should take care of ourselves.
So,
you know, we can still flee. But if the Khmer Rouge, if Pol Pot or somebody of his ilk gets control and eliminates all that, now you can't just leave. Now the long arm of the government will be there. This is why we have these independent states.
Yes.
So it's just like we're not there yet, and hopefully we never get there because of the government we created. But you can just see a time coming where a guy like Mandani is in the White House and says, no, you can't leave.
Yeah.
You're still subject to our control.
Yeah.
This is why we don't want that sort of centralized, all-powerful federal government.
Right.
That's why we don't want it.
Right.
The bulwark against that is the individual state.
I'm happy to have 50 different traffic law, you know, codes. I'm happy to have 50 different housing code. You know, these laboratories of democracy, being 50 of them, it's fabulous because you could just pack up your bags if Ohio gets too oppressive for you.
Bye-bye.
I mean, you can move.
Yeah. Now,
I mean, that's painful, but at your final act of rebellion
is freedom.
Is freedom to leave.
Freedom to leave.
No.
Now, we the other thing Troy and I were kicking around, it's like, and I've said this before, probably even on the show, is that we are the only place, or There are no walls in the United States to keep people in. You can leave.
Yes.
You can go bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
But the Pol Pots of the world, the Venezuelans, like they have to keep people there.
Yes.
So they are forcing their people to stay right. there.
Berlin
so
Wall.
So when you hear Gavin Newsom or Mondani or anyone else talk about right. the long arm of the government taxing right. you from afar, really what you're saying is they can't leave.
Yeah. The it's Hotel people, California. Yeah. You can check out, but you can't leave.
Yeah. And we're going to keep you here, at least financially.
Yeah.
And that's a scary thought.
Yeah, we're going to follow you around. I mean, he's looking at how Tesla went to Texas, and they lost all that revenue.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's got to be killing, you know, the Silicon Valley, San Francisco area, and California writ large. It's got to be killing them to have all these businesses exit. And yet they have this huge social safety net that they're paying people basically to do nothing.
Right.
Don't worry about
the money, Norm.
The fraud in Minnesota.
Worry about how are you going to pay for it?
The fraud in Minnesota will pale by comparison. When they start uncovering the incompetence, including here in Ohio, but out in California, it'll be staggering.
Yeah.
And now the latest is that they're going to start looking at Medicaid fraud.
Well, let's unpack this because.
And good God. Here we go.
Let's change gears here and let's focus on this Minnesota fraud and what's really going on.
Right.
I mean, how many indictments do we have now? I think there was something like 80 or 90 last I checked, convictions rather.
We got 2,000 ICE and DHS agents now who have been deployed to go to Minnesota and knock on employer doors, door by door, employer by employer, looking for verification that their employees have green cards or are otherwise legal here in the U.S.
Except they're not going to stay at Hilton.
Well, Hilton defranchised that particular location.
Oh, did it? Really?
Yes, they did.
They took
away their medallion, at least for the time being. They're not in the system anymore.
So what happened is a local Hilton hotel, I don't know if they said it publicly, but there was some internal
documents. It was a Hampton brand of Hilton.
IHG is the brand.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's Holiday Inn. It was.
Oh, no. Yeah, you're right.
It was Hampton, a division of Hilton. Yeah.
And did they publicly state their position or was this a.
It was. It's a little unclear, but they said the owner of that particular location decided he didn't want ICE. He or she didn't want ICE staying there and actually is on video with an ICE person at the desk explaining the policy. You're not welcome.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Now let's unpack that. I guess on its face, I can disagree with that position that I think it's foolish.
Sure.
On the other hand, I respect that he has a right to do that.
Oh, clearly.
But there are consequences.
Of absolutely. And
this is what's remarkable about the market. There are consequences to that. If I am a businessman, as I am, and you, Norm, have a hotel next to me, and you say, guess what? We don't rent to you dirty, rotten ICE people.
More business for you?
I'm going to think, well, I sure as heck do. Or if you have a bank and you say, sorry, I'm not going to lend to black folks or women or any minorities. I'm going to say, well, that fool is an idiot.
Totally.
I'm going to lend and make money as much as I possibly can. And that's not motivated at all by race. That's motivated by this evil notion of greed.
Sure.
Agreed.
And Hilton cut that location loose like immediately.
Yeah.
They had to.
Right.
Same day, man.
Yeah.
They came out with a strong statement that said everybody's welcome at our hotels. ICE, whoever, military, police, whatever. You're welcome, of course.
You know, like, because it's like it's stupid.
Well, we're not drilling down in like what your occupation is and then making a judgment about whether you're welcome here.
Now, and let me say this, we're going to do a quick overview of discrimination. This is a form of discrimination.
Sure it is.
This is a hotel, a Hilton hotel, Hampton Inn, saying we are going to actively discriminate against ICE agents and we're not going to do business with them. We're going to cut them out. I personally agree that the Hampton Inn has every right to do that.
Sure.
Every right. And I'm also saying this. It's not It's not, it does not violate, I don't believe, any civil rights act or law, unless there's something local up there that's in place. I don't know. But if you're not discriminating based on age, race, color, national, whatever the big suspect classes are,
right.
There's no cause of action.
Protected classes.
They're not protected class. ICE is not a protected class. No. They can't sue. But the market is sufficient here to fix it.
Yeah. Well, the GAO disenfranchised them also. The General Accounting Office said, guess what? You don't meet the federal, what would you call it? The federal guest policy, you know, like because basically there is a negotiated rate for federal employees.
Yeah.
And they said, well, since you're excluding ICE agents, guess what? No other federal employee is going to stay at your location.
Yeah.
So like somebody from the Department of Transportation or somebody from the EPA, like no federal, like we are now divorcing you as an approved location for any federal business.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, this guy's taking it.
Yeah. Consequences. Yeah, right. So now the other side is going to say, well, he did the right thing. Fair enough.
But who cares? I could care less. That he did knock the right yourself thing. Out.
I don't care. But here's where things go sideways. If you're going to permit that kind of discrimination, then you better be ready for other types of discrimination when it doesn't go your way. So now you're going to have a hotel that's going to say,
I don't want
Mr. Antifa, you can't stay here. Or sorry, we're not going to rent to any illegals, or we're not going to rent to green cards, or we're not going to rent to And as long as it's not a suspect class, there's nothing you can do about it. So look, fine, open up the marketplace. And if these idiots are stupid enough to say, I'm not going to rent to a certain class of people, then
I think there have been, I believe maybe during the election, there were bars, there were nightclubs that, depending on which presidential candidate you were
backing. Yeah, are you an R or are you a D?
Yeah, they would ban people that had MAGA hats. Like, you can't come in this bar.
They have every right to do it, as far as I'm concerned.
And the other side was saying, you know, basically, if you don't support the Second Amendment, don't come in here and drink beer.
And I would be saying, as a business owner, I don't care who you vote for.
No.
Come spend your money in my establishment.
Absolutely.
And unless you violate the law, or unless you become belligerent, or unless you do something that is disruptive, I'll be happy to.
Haven't you gone to a muffler shop, Steve, or a restaurant, and somebody will have Fox News on, or back in the old days, Rush Limbaugh show. And even though I enjoy some of the Fox programming and I loved Rush, I would always say to myself, oh my God, that guy is pissing off half of America by playing this stuff.
And he's got every right to do it.
You got every right, but like, that's a bad business
decision.
It's
a bad business decision. So this is an interesting discussion about how you drive, and this is very Thomas Sowell-esque, right?
Right.
Like, how do you drive fairness and this notion of equality? And the market here, while imperfect, is the best.
Yeah.
You're always going to find people who are racist. You're always going to find people who are acting for bad reasons.
Right.
You're always going to find that. But in general, you're mostly going to utilize, this is sort of Thomas Sowell, and maybe way back before him, John Locke's theory on this stuff, is that
Milton Friedman.
You're going to utilize the very part of human nature that Mondani criticizes to reach the goals that Mondani's trying to reach.
That's right.
So you're going to use human self-interest to get to a spot that doesn't eliminate, but let's say fights against or works against these racist outcomes, because greed is going to say, I'm going to serve anybody because I'm going to get paid.
Right.
And unless the government's hand is on the scale, like in Jim Crow South, if you take that approach, you're not going to succeed in business.
That's correct.
You're not going to do it. Right. It's like we've talked about the buses.
Right.
If you've got government-owned buses in Jim Crow South, and black folks only could ride in the back, that's all that ever happened, because the government owned the buses. As soon as it was privately owned, the buses were full, and it didn't matter what color you were. The laws were in place, but they weren't followed because if I own a bus, I'm going to fill it up and get as many fares as I can, and I don't care about empty back seats or front seats.
100%.
And I could be a racist asshole.
Right.
And still, that would be the deal.
This is where the military, so we had your son on last week's show. And, of course, Troy here is a veteran. And this is where the military sometimes is way ahead of the rest of society, because people in the army are all green. Nobody gives a rat what kind of pigmentation you have. You know, we're all green. We're all very mission focused. And that is the, you know, that's kind of one of the big successes that came out of World War II, was the obvious fallacy that had been in place of separating black and white troops from each other, when it was pretty clear during the war that, hey, we don't really care who is coming to the rescue of the airborne in Bastogne. So if you've got a column of black tankers in their Shermans and they're available to come and, you know, help rescue Bastogne, Patton's like, send those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
Because I don't care what race they are. And so the Army learned, and the Red Tails flying the P-51 Mustangs, you know, the guys in the B-17s were like, I got to buy that guy a beer. Mm-hmm. They go to the base and go, it's all black guys. Well, yeah, in their airplane, you can't tell that they're black guys. But you get down there and meet the people flying those planes, and then it dawns on you, who gives a rat's ass what color they are?
In the military, I mean, Troy, you were in the military, and there's all sorts. My sons, so I've went and watched the graduations. I've seen it. And you get folks from all over the place. And it's funny talking to my son and even a couple. Nobody seems to give a crap.
No, not at all. I think I remember the first thing I noticed when I got the basic is, like, one, white people are like the minority there on the enlisted side. Like, I probably go with, we were like 30%. It was
a lot of Latinos too.
Yeah. And I think there was like probably 12 in my class that got their citizenship through basic training. So they actually, like,
it's a pathway.
It's really cool. You just get to meet everybody from all over the world. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody becomes the same thing, American soldier.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I played football, I came from a rural high school locally here.
Yeah.
And I went to college, and there were both black and white. I mean, maybe 50-50, maybe even not even. I don't remember what the mix would have been. But no, I didn't care. Nobody cared. We became fast friends.
You're mission focused.
Because we were on the same team with the same mission, with the same goals. And it was true diversity, meaning we didn't preserve, like, we came together as one.
Right.
And, you know, like, the diversity became a cohesive unit. So this, the best of everybody would move forward.
So this topic,
it was a melting pot, maybe.
This topic is how Governor Waltz in Minnesota is now in so much trouble, because now he's got whistleblowers that are testifying to Congress that they informed the governor's office as long ago as six, seven years ago that there was this massive fraud taking place. Okay. And so what explains Tim Walz's reluctance to address the fraud? And it comes down to identity politics. Mm-hmm. He was so frightened of being accused of racism that he wouldn't do the practical thing and be race blind and say, I don't care if it's white fraudsters, yellow fraudsters, red fraudsters, black, brown fraudsters, fraud is bad. And whoever's committing the fraud, regardless of their race, is a target for investigation. And he would not do that because the Somali population in Minnesota has become a political force. And he knows, just like they're doing now, you know, AOC and Ilhan Omar, all of these people are saying Trump and Tulsi Gabbard and all of these, you know, all of these people that are now investigating the fraud in Minnesota, that they are doing so because the fraudsters are black. Well, that's just ridiculous.
Right. For the same face. It's funny.
If they were Swedish fraudsters, I want the same investigation.
And there probably are some.
I could care less.
Right? There probably are some.
Absolutely.
But when you have a community, so what's happened is I think the small community is very tight.
Yeah.
So I would say for childcare, for instance, look, you have two kids, I have two kids.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get approval to be daycare for you. You get approval to be daycare for me.
Right.
And we can have the government fund it. And really, there's, it's like, I mean, And that worked in that tight community. I'm not saying that didn't happen in other communities. It may well have.
This is apparently has happened in Ohio.
And if this is going on, and I mean not other ethnic communities.
Gotcha.
I don't care if you're white.
Oh, doing,
and look,
Polish. Who cares?
I've represented folks doing this kind of stuff over the years, and it's fraud is fraud is fraud is fraud.
Yeah.
I mean it is what it is. But I think the tightness of their community helped it.
But look at what identity politics has done to destroy competent management in America. Mm. It has made these largely white politicians have become so conditioned and so worried about their reputation.
Xenophobic,
oh my God.
Racist.
Call me whatever you want. I want to be a good manager this is where I think here in Ohio, especially, we have had a series of rhino, terrible Republican governors, basically since Jim Rhodes. You know, we've had John Kasich, who came in he's a budget hawk. He was going to reform stuff. Well, he turned into a Democrat. And then, you know, Bob Taft was a disaster. George Voinovich was a disaster. Mike DeWine should be impeached, frankly. And a Republican filed articles of impeachment against DeWine during COVID mm-hmm. for his stupid policies then. Well, what they have found just recently here in Columbus, there is a grocery store up on Morse Road called the Jabba Food Market. That address is the address for the auditing firm for some of the Minnesota and Ohio daycare fraud. A grocery store on Morse Road called the Jabba Food Market.
Yeah.
I mean, and so far what they have found is about 140 daycare programs in Ohio are linked to that place. And people like this Nick Shirley guy who's looked into Minnesota, he's come to Ohio. They've gone to some of these places where these daycare centers and these food for needy children, these food programs were supposed to physically be. There's nobody there, Steve. There's no typewriters. There's no phones.
Just a shell.
It's just a shell. And so far, they have found $14 million went through that little food market as recently as June of this past year.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
And look, you can't think that Minnesota is not alone. Ohio, Columbus, Ohio is not alone.
So I'm not going to get all partisan here and say it's because Waltz is a Democrat. DeWine suffers from the same disease. He doesn't want anybody to think he's racist. Shitty manager of our tax money. And so it cuts both ways.
Yeah, well, look, I agree with you 100%. And look, if Waltz didn't have the stones to stand up to this, so be it. He's gone.
He should be impeached out of Minnesota. And frankly, DeWine should be gone.
Well, the question is, are they going to get indicted? And this is going to be a different, you know, these are political questions that are above my pay grade. But, it wouldn't surprise me if there is evidence, proof somewhere, emails, correspondence, something where people in charge, whether it's Walls or below him.
Yeah.
Actively turned the blind eye.
Yeah.
And said, we're not going to touch that. And, you know, is that an impeachment? Is that getting fired? Is there a lawsuit or is it even criminal? I will let those figure it out. But
it's political. And that's what impeachment is.
It's political for sure. But when we're the taxpayers.
And he has dropped out of his reelection campaign.
He has dropped out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're banging the table, demanding more tax money from the rich.
Yeah.
They are squandering it for fraud at the same, you know, it's like, I think the people are going to have enough of this. This is, again, maybe the market will expose the rot here and get some sunshine on it.
What I'm worried about here in Ohio, especially, is we have had a series. So we have a Republican General Assembly, both the Senate and the House, and we've got the governor. And we have a largely Republican Supreme Court here in Ohio. And for the last 50 years, right, they haven't got rid of the income tax, and we have this groundswell of people now who want to get rid of the property tax. Well, if you get rid of the property tax, how are you going to run local government? Because it's basically run out of property taxes.
Yep.
And so where are the Republicans here in Ohio is what I want to know. You know, over the last year, we've talked about Jobs Ohio. We've talked about COVID. We've talked about Intel. We've talked about Ohio's we are overtaxed in this state to the point now that there's a groundswell to put the issue on the ballot. And when people see that they can vote to get rid of property taxes, I'm really worried that they're going to do like they did on abortion and like they did on marijuana. People are going to go in there with a ball of steam, having been so taxed off that they're going to vote for that.
Taxed off. We should coin that term. You heard it here first.
That's a
off.
Jim Trafficant.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, from Youngstown, right? He used to say, "Beam me up, Scotty. I'm taxed off."
There you go.
So I think we're in real trouble here in Ohio, and it's because of feckless, spineless Republican leadership. And we need, and Vivek Ramaswamy is not the guy. If you impeached, if we got rid of DeWine a year out, then Tressel would take over as governor, and maybe Dave Yost would get back in the race. Because I think Vivek may lose.
To Amy Acton?
I do. He is not that popular, and I think a lot of the MAGA people are going to sit on their hands. They're not going to vote for him.
But are they going to? But
because he did that H-1B thing where he said, "Hey, you American people are kind of stupid, and we need to bring in Indian engineers."
Yeah, I don't know what to think of Vivek. I mean, look, we'd love to have him on the show. I'd love to hear his policies.
Well, what are his policies, right? And this is what's real. Like, where is he on fraud? Like all this stuff here in Ohio, he's going to have to take on the DeWine administration and say how bad they have handled Ohio's finances.
Yeah, we will see how that I don't think we're quite.
Oh, we're going to get there.
We're not quite there.
Yeah,
time between now and the election, but it's going to come.
It's
going to come. We're going to have to get on the mic. Both sides are going to have to get on the mic and address this stuff and see what happens. And I think like you said, this cuts across political.
It does. It's about competent management.
And if one of these sides is going to have to step up and say, based on your input, here's my analysis of what has to happen. Whoever wants to win this election has to step up and not just say they're going to take care of it, but then you start taking care of the stuff.
Right.
They need to say, look, I don't care if you're Somali. I don't care if you're Indian. I don't care if you're white. I don't care if you're whatever you are.
Right.
If you're breaking the law, we're going to not only prosecute, we're going to roll it back. We're going to fix this. We're going to change the policy so this doesn't happen again.
Right. We need a DOGE for Ohio.
Yeah.
I mean, and we talked about that on our show here.
The O-DOGE.
Yeah, we do. Because that is basically the impulse that is driving this investigation into fraud.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to talk a little bit about Venezuela? We
yeah,
touched
absolutely.
On it a little
let's
bit.
Let's talk about it.
You know, I mean, some people are... in my opinion, I'll just say what I think. I mean, there was an indictment of Maduro and his wife in 2020 under the Biden DOJ. And what they did with this two-hour raid was perfect an arrest based on that indictment. So they went and got, you know, two scofflaws that are you know, accused of being drug dealers and embezzlers and obviously torturers of their own people, and they brought them to America to face American justice in a federal court. And I'm like, okay, I don't see how that's regime change. I don't see how that's an invasion or an occupation. I don't see how it's a war. He wasn't duly elected by all accounts. He only got 20% of the vote in the last election.
Yeah,
I think it's a swish. I think the administration, you know, they're responding. If you go back and play old Hillary and Joe Biden tapes, even Obama, they were calling for the physical removal of Maduro, and I think they meant by native Venezuelans.
Well, I can't peel back the onion of government influence, but it wouldn't surprise me if we were funding folks to try to do that on a local level.
Yeah.
Right. So
like that Nobel Prize winning lady who led the opposition, Machado.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows what really happens, what really went on, but you're right. Again, this is one of those things that sort of crosses the political divide. And then there's Trump derangement syndrome, because look, if this happens under Obama's watch, it would be touted as the greatest military, act of all time,
like killing bin Laden.
Yeah,
for
right.
Obama,
that's right.
You know,
and if it happened under Biden's, then it would have been celebrated for being such a strategic genius for getting this done. happens under Trump, the Trump opposition is in sort of a weird position because, yeah. you know, you've got all these people saying this is the, like the locals in Venezuela are on the streets celebrating.
Absolutely.
Everybody's talking about it. Anybody who knew, who lived under that regime or something like it is coming out publicly and saying, look, this was the greatest thing, getting rid of this murderous authoritarian dictator. But Trump did it, so now they're having trouble celebrating it. And, you know, I guess you could say, they could say, look, even if you don't like the means of how it happened, you still have to at least agree or celebrate that he's gone. A couple of things about it that I like. I like that nobody, no American lives were lost in this action.
Some injuries. But
some injuries, no but deaths. No deaths reported that I'm aware of. And we went in and out, and we didn't kill him.
We killed 32 Cuban guards.
We killed some guards, but we didn't kill the person who we were trying to extradite. So it wasn't just an assassination mission.
Yeah.
They're going to call it an extradition mission because he was indicted. But really what this was is this was a murderous guy who was influencing negatively our sphere here in the Western Hemisphere.
Right. He sold out to China.
Yeah.
He had Cuban bodyguards. I mean, what's that tell you?
Yeah. And
we're the Venezuelan, you know, Secret Service. Instead, he's got Cuban bodyguards. It's crazy.
Yeah. So, you know. Look, that's what this is all about. He'll be put on trial. And I guess
who trains the Cubans? The KGB or the NKVD or whatever they call them.
So, look,
the FSB.
There are bad people in the world, and they had a foothold in Venezuela in the form of Maduro.
Yeah.
And we put an end to it. And not only that, he's committing legitimate trafficking crimes, or at least he's allegedly committing legitimate trafficking crimes.
Yeah.
So bring him to court, prove the case.
Right.
Do what you do.
Right. And the precedent was set with Noriega. I saw Bill Barr on the talking head shows on Sunday. And Bill Barr under George Bush when we went and got Noriega.
And then before that, Grenada.
I mean, there is precedent for us arresting a head of state who is also a criminal.
Yeah.
And in this case, he wasn't even legitimately the head of state.
Yeah. So, and now the question becomes, how do you take on the end game here? And who's like, you know, this is sometimes where Trump gets himself in trouble with his rhetoric. Oh, we're running it, or I'm going to keep the money.
Right.
We're
running it by blockade.
We're running it because, look, we are not going to tolerate just another Maduro coming in because we're going to be in the same boat.
Well, we control the Gulf of America, formerly the Gulf of Mexico.
We are in control of
that. We control that. And so when the Venezuelan oil tankers want to depart and go to places like Cuba or China, guess what? We're going to stop it.
We're going to stop it. And then, by the way, Troy, how badass was the military on this thing?
I thought it was pretty cool. Delta Force is like the cream of the crop. That's like the best. If you've seen Black Hawk Down, that's like or the Battle of Mogadishu. That is like the top extraction force in the world. There's nobody better than Delta Force. They recruit from like all the special forces. So like when you think of Navy SEALs, Green Berets, Rangers, they recruit from those guys to be the top force.
But even like apparently China or Russia rather had supplied Venezuela with anti-aircraft weapons, completely ineffective.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like you can't beat us. We dominate the sky. Every other country invests so much in air defense artillery other than the United States because we already control it, so we don't have to invest in it. It's the best part of our military.
Yeah, and to have such a surgical strike to get in and out with hardly any fanfare.
Yeah.
I think it is a message to the world that we're still badass.
Well, I think I said on the show, so I'm gonna pat myself on the back, but I think a couple of shows ago when we were talking about Trump taking out the drug boats, and I said, you can't take out enough drug boats for me. And like, if a guy's on a drug boat, he should know that he is a target to be like he.
Yeah,
you're eligible to be killed on the high seas.
That one's
I'm totally fine with that. Like it doesn't bother me. They say every one of those boats was hauling enough cocaine or fentanyl material to kill 25,000 Americans per boat. So you take out two or three of those sailors, right? That's what the Democrats want to call them, sailors.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, again, if
kill them all, man. Irrespective,
we can break that down. Whether they should be arrested, whether they should be killed, but what's crazy to me is that if I just can't help but think, if any of that happens under Biden, it would be celebrated. If it happens under Trump, he's vilified.
But what I said is that that whole thing, and now this extraction of Maduro, the whole thing to me is not only getting a drug dealer into court, but it's a demonstration project for Russia, China, and Iran. Because right now there's a revolt fulminating in Iran.
Well, that was just going to say.
While we talk. And they took notice of this.
And Trump has sort of given the same kind of warnings that he's given to everybody.
Yeah.
It's like, look, we're going to do something to stop it. You better not do this. And these people, like Maduro is like taunting people. The Colombian guy is taunting people. Like, come get me, come get me. Yeah. It's like. He probably will. That's the thing.
Well, the CIA and Delta Force, Troy just talked about, have been in Colombia before. That's how that's how we got Pablo Escobar. Mm. They did the coup de grace. So Colombian soldiers and police killed Pablo. But it was Delta Force and the CIA up in their airplanes and their E6B, you know, monitoring ELINT. It was American assets that allowed the Colombian military to get Pablo.
All right.
We can go right back and do this all over again.
Well, let's. The world's watching Iran next because of these. They're shooting protesters, and
Trump said, "Don't kill the protesters."
So we'll see.
So we'll see.
All right, good and bad and ugly.
Yeah. So for me, we kind of covered it. The Mamdani. Mamdani thing where he appointed this rent control lady.
Her name is Sia Weaver, by the way. Sia Weaver.
Sia Weaver. Thank you. Yeah.
So Miss Weaver, she wants to detach title to real estate and make it more of like a lien, that during your lifetime or during some period of time, you have the right to use the land, but the land would be collectively owned. And she wants to transition American society away from Steve owns his house, I own my house, Troy one day will own his house when he makes
some
money.
And you're just not used to it, Mel. You're just not used to not owning
I need to
property.
Share. So do you guys ever see Dr. Zhivago, that magnificent scene when he comes home from the Civil War and walks into the mansion and every room has some strange family living in it? And there's the political officer greets him at the door. Oh, Zhivago. And he says, well, it's good to be back home. And the guy says, well, this is not your home anymore. But you have a little piece of it up there in the attic. Mm-hmm. You and your wife can be up there.
So how do they resolve? How does she, pray tell, resolve these disputes?
I don't know.
These collective disputes.
About taking these apartment buildings. Why do rent control via a private landlord, right, and an owner? Just make that New York City property.
It's like the beginning of.
And then we'll dictate rent is.
It's sort of like the beginning of Marxism back in Italy, you know, when they realized that, look, the revolt's not happening, so we're just going to target the labor unions and try to get them to do it. And now they're sort of focusing, instead of that, they're focusing on they call it like, renter's rights or tenant's rights,
right,
which is really a euphemism for Marxism,
exactly,
for detachment of personal ownership.
So my pro is I like the fact that, even better than his first term, I like a muscular president. I like your Teddy Roosevelt type of presidents. I like your Abraham Lincoln type presidents. So they call this we're hearkening back to the Monroe Doctrine of 200 years ago, 1823. It's now 2026. So almost exactly 200 years later, we have the Doctrine. And what's great about this is it basically, we are setting up this idea that America is going to have a buffer zone. And that's what the Monroe Doctrine was all about originally. It was telling European powers to quit colonizing the Americas, that we did not want them here anymore. And in exchange, we will stay out of European affairs. And I think, like, that's a pretty good deal. Europe, take care of Ukraine. We'll take care of Cuba. You know, this is our hemisphere. You got yours, we got ours. China, stay out. And the stock market yesterday had its all-time best, you know, greatest
Yeah, I mean, look, the number. Like we're
so clearly the market likes what Trump's doing.
Well, it's energy, right?
I mean, it's energy, and it's cheap energy.
Yeah.
So when people say, "Oh, this is all about helping oil companies make more money when oil is rarer."
Yeah, how is Mondani getting oil? Because New York doesn't. There's no refineries in New York doing anything,
and it's not going to help Exxon and Chevron to have the market glutted with cheap oil, which is about what's going to happen.
Yeah.
They do better in terms of profits when oil is high, when scarcity. It's over $100 a barrel. Look,
if we can't get Venezuelan oil, then there's scarcity in the market,
right.
and the prices
better.
Go up.
So if you wanted to help the oil companies, Trump should have just done nothing.
Yep.
He's helping consumers is what he's doing.
Yeah. This will drive prices down. The market will go up because
it's
energy.
It's also very naive for liberals to make the argument that a war or a military action over natural resources is somehow immoral. Just about every war has been fought over land expansion, expanding America westward. We mm-hmm. fought the Indians, you know? So if they feel so bad out there in California that we fought, you know, the Spaniards and Mexico and the Indians, well, then give all your big mansions in Palo Alto back to the Indians.
After all, it's a collective property. All right, so good and bad for me. Look,
yes,
we've talked about the bad. The taste of humble pie with the Ohio State loss, that sucks. I agree with you. I was also focusing on this individual property thing. I mean, I blew my mind to see that. It was like reading Das Kapital all
right,
over again.
Right. So who's going to build a new apartment building in New York City?
Nobody.
With that kind of
yeah, right. Why don't you go in there with your money, Dorm?
Yeah, so. Right.
After all, it's just money.
It's just money.
Good for me. I started Father Mike Schmidt's Bible in a Year podcast. You know, I study the Bible. I try to every morning. But for those of you who do that every morning, it's really hard to keep up on it because it can get a little dense and whatever. These are like 20-minute, I think so far, nothing longer than 20-minute little chunks of his podcast. Wow. And look, you're not getting the deep dive that you can get that different places.
Oh, yeah.
He's not getting but you're getting a nice overview of the Bible. In a year. So okay. On day 7.
This is a Catholic priest?
This is a Catholic priest, Father Mike Schmidt, the Bible in a Year podcast. It's great. It's very consumable for in our day and age. He'll read the scripture to you. And then at the end, the last half of it, typically he's talking about giving you a little lesson and the parallels between life and what's going on there.
Yeah.
So good stuff. Check it out.
That is. That's
Troy, you got any good and bad? We're ambushing you.
I know. I didn't have any prep, but I laid down some notes about some stuff you guys were talking about. I think, Norm, you brought up Vivek. You don't think he's winning?
I think it's very questionable that he's going to win. All he's right. behind in the polls, and I know it's a year out, kind of meaningless right now. But I'm concerned about the MAGA people staying home because of his pronouncement a year ago about H-1B visas, basically saying Ohio students, you know, are gamers in the basement and they're not ambitious. And we need to import smart people because our domestic population is dumb. Mm-hmm. Essentially what he said. And then he doubled down on it. Like instead of apologizing and clarifying it, he doubled down and said, oh, yeah, we need H-1Bs.
I don't really like polls. Me and Steve talked about this the other day. The poly markets have them at 83%.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So I don't see Amy Acton pulling this out. She is...
Amy Acton's not even in the top three in the poly market.
Well, and she's not the candidate yet. She's just running. Yeah. Like, she hasn't won the Democratic primary.
Yeah, but she's the one.
Somebody else could jump in, like that Ryan guy who's pretty sharp cookie, the ex-congressman from up north. Like, he's a moderate Democrat, you know.
The polys have him at, like, 10%. So they have him over Amy. Like actually,
they do?
Well, yeah. I think Vivek's heretofore has been very politician-like.
Yes.
You know, he's sort of smarmy's not, I'm not going to go say smarmy, but a little bit of that, you know,
yes.
Like, he's got a smile and he's very, and now I've met him, shook his hand.
Sure.
I've encountered him. He's a very impressive guy.
Yep. He went to my high school. I want to like him.
Yeah.
But his policies are opaque at this point.
Well, he needs to. So if campaign advisor Norm is saying, come out, take some positions,
that's
take
right.
some stances. And look, if anybody wants to emulate Troy, we've talked about this too. It's like Trump is a unique figure because it's not, I don't think he's in a conservative ideologue, but he acts He's an actor. He's a Roosevelt type, Teddy Roosevelt type yeah, actor.
That's right.
He is going to act on his vision of right and wrong, which is, I think, generally correct.
Right. And it's generally conservative, but not always.
Not always.
Because he's not really a conservative.
So if Vivek could take a lesson there, he needs to take a stance and act on it.
That's right.
And look, we're inviting you to the show. We'd love to hear your policies, hear what you stand for. And
we'll give you a fair shake. Absolutely.
We had Vance
on the show. We had Marino on the show.
I like him.
And we ask tough questions, but we're fair.
Yeah, I like him. So far I'm on his side. So anyway.
I got one more here though. Okay. This was a quick one. You were talking about the indictments, Minnesota. We got 98 indictments there, 50 convictions.
50 convictions, 98 yeah. indictments. And just from a criminal defense perspective, those convictions are probably pleas. I suspect there have been no trials. And what happens is on those pleas, you get something like cooperation or proffer agreements. So at least I would say a good chunk of those convicted or getting convicted or indicted are sitting in some office at some United States attorney's building, singing like canaries about everything that's going on.
Yeah.
This is going to go and go and go and go and go. So you didn't hear it here first, but you heard it here.
And you know, the same thing with the Maduro trial that's coming. The guy who ran the drug operation for Maduro was tried and convicted in the United States like a couple of years ago. And I'm sure he wants his sentence reduced. And I'm sure he's going to sing.
In federal court, they call that a Rule 35. And I'm sure it's been discussed. And I'm sure it probably has already happened. So look.
There's a witness right there.
CommonSenseOhioShow.com for those who want to check out the website or leave us a comment in the socials. You want us to cover us a topic or you want us to cover a topic, just send us an email or leave it in the social media post wherever you want. I will do our best to cover it. You think you got the chops to be a guest with Norm? I doubt it, but give it a shot. We'll bring you on either way. Common Sense Ohio coming at you right from the middle each and every week.